Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Tathagata, by chanting Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Today, I want to start off by talking about a game. It's an interesting game. I think it's a game that I hope all have played before. I don't know. We'll find out. And it's a game that I think throughout everyone's childhood, we normally get to play. And that is the game of Snake and Ladders. Snakes and Ladders. We all know the game, right? We have a grid. The grid has ladders. And has snakes. And our goal is to get to square 100. We have a dice. And it's a race against everyone else. So we hope that we take the dice, we roll the dice, and we hope that we get a large enough number. Or, luckily, if we're lucky, we get to get onto a ladder, which gets us high up. Now, if you really look at it, the game of Snakes and Ladders is so similar, if not exactly similar, to the game of life. Let me explain, right? Now, just imagine we have a grid, right? Unfortunately, I don't have a board of snakes and ladders to show you. But if we did, right, just imagine on the board we have a board of snakes and ladders. The only difference with the game of snakes and ladders of our life is that actually most squares don't have ladders. Most squares have what? Snakes. Now, it's very interesting. It's very interesting because you don't see these snakes. See, this game of snakes and ladders isn't the normal kind. These snakes are not visible until you land on the square. These snakes are almost hidden under the square. Once you land on it, do you realize, oops, it's a snake. That means I have to go back. Now, let me explain. Throughout life, we do various things. We do whatever we possibly can in search of what? Very simple, in search of what? What are we searching for, day in, day out? We're searching for the holy grail of what? Happiness. Day in, day out. Every single minute, we're always searching for this holy grail of happiness. And each time, we do different things. You do one way. The person to your left does a complete different way. The person to your right will do something completely different in search of the same thing, happiness. Now, the question I really want to ask is, whatever you do in search of happiness, what do you truly gain from it? What is it that you truly gain from the things that you do in search, in this pursuit of happiness? All right, let's take some examples. And these examples, I'll give examples, but I want you to be able to take what I'm saying and put it into your own experiences. put it into your own experiences and answer these questions in your heads. Now, in pursuit of happiness, say for example myself, every time we came to Sri Lanka for holidays, for some reason we always find our way climbing up the massive rock of Sigiri. So in Sri Lanka, there's a huge rock which used to be a palace or a kingdom. Now it's ruins, of course, and we used to climb it. Now, this is us rolling the dice. We have this dice, a six-sided dice. We take it, we roll it, and it says, climb up Sigiri. So what do? You start climbing. One step after the other, after the other, after the other. As you're going up to the top, right, it takes give or take a couple hours to get to the top, depending on your fitness level. Yeah, some people take more than 3-4 hours. It's a hassle, right? You get to the top and then what? And then what? And then you give yourself a clap and a pat on the back and you say, oh, I climbed up this massive rock, right? To celebrate with this immense joy of climbing up this rock, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? You take a photograph, right? You take a photograph of the blue skies, the green trees, and the valleys and the scenery. You take a photograph, and especially the photograph has to have who inside? It has to have me, because you need to have evidence, right, that you climbed up this rock. So you take a photograph, or you ask someone to take a photograph, and then what? After patting yourself on the back, what do you do next? Okay, so on this game of snakes and ladders, you rolled. Now, let's say Sigiri is very tiring, lots of steps. You get a 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What have you gained? What have you gained? A snake. That leads you back to where? Back to 0. Because all you're left is what? All you are left is what? A photograph that'll be stored in your phone storage for until you either lose the phone, the storage goes, you had to delete it, or for some reason it's gone. If not, it'll still be in your storage until the end of time, let's hope. But apart from that, what have you gained? There is something that you do gain. Every time you take steps up this, take steps on this game of snakes and ladders, there is one thing that you are gaining from it. It's not really gaining, it's more losing. What is that? Time. Unlike every other snakes and ladders game, this one's a time game. There's only a specific amount of time that we have. But after the time runs out, well, whether you're on square 1 or whether you're on square 99, you have to stop the game. If you are lucky and you get to 100, you don't need to play again. But if you're unlucky, back to square 0. Back to square 1. Again, rolling the dice. Now, this is the same thing with almost everything that we do in life. Okay, I'm hungry. Right? So what am I going to do? I'm going to go all the way to Italy to buy a pizza. Or they say New York has the best pizza. So you fly all the way to New York just for what? Pizza. You fly, you spend X amount of money, X amount of time, right? So from Sri Lanka to, I think, America, that's almost a 13, 14, 15 hour flight. I'm guessing. 15 hours on a flight. If it's a direct flight, you're sitting down for 15 hours. Very difficult stuff. And you fly all the way there. You go to a shop. You order a pizza. You eat the pizza. And then what? And then what? To have evidence that you've been there, what do? You take a photo. And then you fly back home. On this game, you were at one, right? You go 5 steps forward, find out it's a what? It's a snake that ends where? Back where? Square one. See, no matter what we do, what we always find is, no matter what number we roll, we always, it's a rigged game. The game is rigged. Because no matter what you do, you always end up back on square one. Having gained nothing but a picture, having gained nothing but experience, having gained nothing but, you know, the bragging rights to say that, you know, I've been to New York, had some pizza and it was amazing. That's all. Apart from that, what else do you gain from it? Well, you lose time. You lose the most precious thing that you own, time. Because you only have a certain amount of time to get to square 100. If you don't, well, it's back to square one. There's no checkpoints. You know, those old games where you can go and you have a checkpoint. You hit the checkpoint and you get if you were to lose a life or you lose all your lives, you go and you're reborn on the checkpoint. This game doesn't have checkpoints. Snakes and Ladders, checkpoints. You don't find checkpoints in Snakes and Ladders. It's no matter what you roll, you go forwards. Then you go back. You go forwards, and then you go back. Okay. All right. Let's take an example where you actually receive something, right? You win the lottery, right? $1 million. Now, with this $1 million, what do? You tell me, if you were to get $1 million, what would you do? All right, pay off some debt, okay. Buy a new car. Buy a good house. Maybe travel the world. But at the end of the day, what have you actually received? What more do you receive than just a memory? The memory, the experience, and the bragging rights that you've done something. Because at the end of the day, you end up in square one. No matter what we do, we end up in square one. Okay, we spend 40 hours a week earning money for things. But the way we start the day is the same way we end the day. You start the day in bed, you end the day in bed. Both the same. You've gained zero. It reminds me of, you know, in physics, the difference between distance and displacement. So you learn this. We learn this in schools, right? I think recently we got some of our little children from our schools got to learn this lesson. So we all know about distance. Distance is the amount that we travel. So from A to B, that's distance. Displacement? Displacement is the shortest distance from A to B. So if we had a circle, the start and finish is the same. Distance is, we'll take the example of 100 meters. Displacement is what? Zero. This is basically our life. no matter what we roll, no matter how big of a number we roll, you know, how we always wait to get that six, right? You know, we blow on the dice, we shake it harder just to get what? A six. But every time you hit the six, you get back onto square one. See, there is a way in this game, this game of life, snakes and ladder, there is a way of getting more steps forward. So, you know, you have six-sided dices. Now, you can have a six-sided die, but then you can also have 12-sided dices. Now, the way you can get more sides on a dice is by doing what? By doing as many merits as we possibly can. We get a dice by helping another person, by doing all these merits. What we're doing is we're getting a dice with more sides. But even though the dice has more sides, it's a rigged game. It ends up back at square one. I remember, I can't remember exactly the game, but there used to be, there was a game, or I remember either a segment of someone playing a game, where no matter how fast they move forwards, so it's a driving game, right, a racing game, no matter how fast they move forward, they can never get to the end. It's only when they realize there is no way to this, by going this way, they won't get to the finish line. Only when they realize that, they realize maybe going backwards is the way. Now, this is interesting, because when you realize the game is rigged, once you realize a game is rigged, what do? You want to no longer play. You no longer want to go forwards, because you know that no matter how hard you try, you're going to always fall back where you started. But if you don't know it's rigged, even if you knew it was rigged, and if you don't have the wisdom to realize that, you know, there's no point of playing, now you keep playing. For example, I don't know if you've ever been to those casinos, what do you call those places? You know where children go and they put in money? The coin slotting machine? You've seen those, right? Where there's a platform that moves forward and backwards. It's got coins all over it. And all you have to do is put a coin in and wait for it to fall somewhere and see how many coins you receive. Now, the reason why it's for children is because why? Children don't realize that it's rigged. Because it will look as though the coins, if this is the platform, it looks as though the coins are like this, piled on the edge, right? With more coins here. So just one coin looks like it's going to make all this tumble. So for one coin, I'm going to get 12 coins. Well, so the child thinks. But when the child is wise enough, it realizes for coins to be set in a way which is off the platform, there has to be a reason why it hasn't fallen yet. There's a magnet here making sure the coin doesn't fall. Now, once the child realizes the game is rigged, what does the child no longer want to do? Play by the rules. They no longer want to play by the rules. They want to find a way out. They want to find loopholes. Now, we've talked about this. See, in past discussions, in past sermons, and in past talks before as well. Like, I think I even asked the same question. How much chocolate do you think an average person eats in their life? How much chocolate do you think an average person eats in a life, in their lifetime? 5 kilos? I'm talking about kilograms. 5 kilos? 10 kilos? 50 kilos, you know, as heavy as a bag of cement. Do you think you eat that much in a lifetime? What do you think, higher or lower? Higher. How much? 100 kilos? Higher. 200 kilos? Higher. 300 kilos? Higher. I think it was a study done in 2021. And they found out that an average human will eat approximately 2,000, if I remember? 2,000, what, grams? 2,000 kilos. That's 2 tons of chocolate in their entire lifetime. Okay, if eating chocolate makes us go further on this game, why do we continue to eat it? Because we end where? Exactly where we started. Just think about it, right? How many TV shows have you watched in your life? Now, I remember, looking back in my life, I remember my mother used to love watching Sri Lankan teledramas. And every now and then, you know, as a very curious child, I'd also be looking and seeing what happens and whatnot. And I remember there were some TV shows, right? I think series that have over 2,000 episodes. 2,000 episodes. And to this day, it's still running. If by watching these TV shows, you are moving forward, why are there 2,000? Shouldn't there just be one and that'd be enough because you're moving forwards? No, because every time you move forwards, you move backwards. You see, no matter where, no matter what number we roll, it's a rigged game. We always end up back where we started, back at square zero or square one. Until you realize the game is rigged. Now you don't play by the rules. See, once you realize the game is rigged, for as long as you realize the game is rigged, now when you roll, what you do is you don't go forwards. Instead, you go where? Backwards. You see, and when you move backwards, you realize by moving backwards, you are actually moving what? Forwards. But instead of having snakes, you get ladders. Now, what do I mean by moving backwards? Like, what is this cryptic message of moving backwards? Like, how do I move backwards? It's not something it's not something that is cryptic. It's not something that is, you know, you have to find the hidden message behind all this. No, moving backward means you're just not playing the game. Instead, you're moving against the game. Understanding the game. Understanding how the game works. By understanding, you're moving backwards. By moving backwards, you're actually moving forwards. So here's the thing, right? By doing more merits, you get a bigger, more sided die, right? You get a bigger dice, right? You get more sides, 20 sides, 30 sides, 40 sides. But you can roll this, but if you keep moving forwards, you always end up with a snake. That's why you can do as many merits as you possibly can, help so many people. But if you're not helping yourself, you end up back where? Back in square one. You can you know, spend the rest of your life, you know, helping one another. But if you don't understand the game is rigged and you don't help yourself, you end up back where? back in square one. The best analogy is that, you know, people, and a lot of people, especially those who do lots of merits, you know, they do lots of merits in hope of that they will be able to enter the heavens. Now, whether the heavens are there or not, that's not my argument here. But what I'm trying to say is, okay, let's say you do go to the heavens. When your merits run out, where do you go? Up? When your merits run out, where do you go? Up? Back to where? Square one. No, kind of minus, but square one. See, we need to realize that that there's only one way of moving forwards, and that's moving backwards, understanding the game. Now, what is there to understand in this game? What is there to understand in this game? All we have to do is understand the actual reality here. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I feeling what I'm feeling? Why am I thinking what I'm thinking? This is the question you should be asking yourself. You get angry. You get furious at someone. You shout at them. You shouting at them brings you up and then brings you back down. But if you ask yourself, why am I angry? What is making me angry? And looking through the eyes of wisdom, now you're moving backwards. Backwards mean you're moving forwards. And then you'll be on a square, not on square one anymore. Why? Because now you no longer need to be angry. Because once you realize the true game, once you understand the true game, you don't play by the rules of snakes and ladders anymore. You play with the rules of wisdom. You play by the rules of wisdom. Now you're taking steps forward. Now you're doing something that's actually making a difference. You see, this is the way to remove yourselves from being angry. From removing yourselves from being frustrated, from being stressed out, from being overwhelmed, from being, you know, furious, by understanding that this game is rigged, that you have to ask yourself, why am I feeling what I'm feeling? Now, the one question that we always get in our heads is, well, anger. Is anger really bad? Is it actually bad? Is it bad being angry? Isn't it not a normal human emotion that everyone has to feel? Now, here's the thing, right? The sense of normality, or for something to be normal, is very interesting. How do you define normal? If everyone does it, it is normal. Does it have to be right or wrong for it to be normal? Does it have to be right or wrong for it to be normal? No, it doesn't need to be right or wrong. It just needs to be everyone has to do it. If everyone does it, it's okay. It's okay. It's normal. For example, if we made it normal to greet someone instead of shaking their hands, right? You give them a tap on the head. For us right now, that seems so abnormal. You don't greet anyone by tapping them on the head. But if everyone starts to do it, now shaking hands is what? Abnormal. Why are they shaking hands? Why are they shaking hands? That's not how you greet people, that you have to tap them on the head. See, which one's right, which one's wrong? It doesn't matter. I think the best example is, I remember learning back in school, right? I think schools do try their very best to educate the children. When it comes to topics of, say, you know, of drugs and whatnot, I think our school especially took a great focus on one of the most dangerous drugs of them all. A drug where it kills many people. And it's very addictive. But unfortunately, it has become such a social norm that no one questions twice, that it's sold so frequently on stores. What is that? Alcohol. Alcohol is a drug. However, you're intoxicating yourself. However, what? Everyone does it, so what? It's normal. It's normal. It's okay. Everyone does it. See, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, that's not the issue here. It's whether everyone does it. So anger, is it right or wrong? Do we enjoy being angry? Is it something that we enjoy having? You know, when something goes wrong and inside you are burning inside, do we enjoy it and say, yay, I'm angry today? No, but when you look around and you see, oh, I'm angry, he's angry, she's angry, they're angry, now what? Oh, it's normal, it's okay. It's fine. But anger is an issue. Stress is an issue. Sadness is an issue. It's something that by playing the game, you will always receive. For example, remember last time you played Snakes and Ladders? What are you always doing? You're always hoping to get what? The biggest number. You know, let's say if you roll a 5, you have a ladder. If you roll a 6, you get a snake. If you roll a 4, you get a snake. What are you hoping? What are you hoping for? To roll a 5. So what are you feeling? Happy? Are you feeling joyful now? No, you have the dice, right? I don't know. Different people have different ways of throwing dice. Because why? They have a lucky way of throwing dice. No? You know, people will blow on the dice. People will shake it exactly 5 times to get what? 5. Right? They'll make sure they throw it a certain distance. Why? To get what? 5. Inside, what are they feeling? Okay, I have to get a 5. I have to get a 5. I have to get a 5. 5, 5, 5. How am I going to get the 5? By rolling this dice. They roll the dice. It's a 6. What are they feeling now? Oh no, it's a snake. Oh dear, it's a snake. I have to go back. I don't know. Have you ever played with people who are sore losers? Who can't, you know, can't handle losing? Ever been playing with any of these people? They'll be like, oh my god, you know, the dice is bias. Where they've been rolling other numbers, but you know, one number, they roll a 5, the dice is bias. We have to get a new dice now. Why? Because it doesn't do it, because the dice didn't roll the number that they wanted. So now they're angry, now they're frustrated, now they're mad. Literally, I've had a friend that, you know, who got so frustrated that they'll flip the board over so no one can play. Why? Because they feel what? Happy? They're going up the game? Or they're going back to square one? You see, I really want you to go through life and see how many steps we've actually taken forwards. I really want you to go to think about life and see how many steps you've actually taken forwards, or how many steps you've actually tried taking forwards, but always came back to the same spot. Really think about this. What have you done in your life that you've actually taken steps forward? Now, imagine, for this example, let's say there's an almighty God, and he's they're looking down at this game. And they're seeing that you're rolling, come back to zero, or come back to square one. Rolling, come back to square one. Rolling, come back to square one. No matter what you do, you'll come back to square one. What do you think the Almighty God would think? What a waste of what? Time. What a waste of what? Resources. Right? I could have spent this with something else. Because no matter what, you're rolling and going back to square one. So really think about this. How can we roll and go up? Simply by understanding the game. Understanding the game and understanding why it's happening. Now, I want to slowly change the topic and continue to ask ourselves why is it that we feel really sad or upset or even happy, but then always end back at square one? I really want to explore this and ask ourselves why this is. Like I was saying, so we have to ask ourselves, why can't we go up? Why is it that we are unable to go up for this game? Why are we always coming back to square one? Now, to answer this question, we have to explore the one thing that we have, but we don't really learn about. And that is our mind. The game that we, the instrument that we use to play this game, the mind. Now, why is it that we, no matter how many steps we take forwards, why do we always end back at square one? We have to answer why do we always go back to square one? We have to look at the mind. The question is, what is the mind? The most simplest definition you can give to a mind, right? What is a mind? A mind is something that is used to perceive the world around it. Simply, in the most simplest way, that is what a mind is. That's why if you had, we had a mad scientist. Can an eye see? Can an eye, you know, eyes, can an eye see? If an eye can see, then can't dead bodies see as well? Can ears hear? If ears can hear, can't any ear that's not connected to anything hear? No, the mind is what brings it all together. The mind is what perceives what is being seen, what is being heard. That is what the mind is. So the mind's job is very simple. Take stimulus and ask itself, what is it? Now, this is all well and good. However, the mind is something that isn't, let's say, isn't something that is one continuous thing. It is something that at this moment will perceive and then give way for another mind to perceive. Because if we only had one mind, just one mind, the mind will perceive and that's it. So it will say, okay, I see a black pen, a black whiteboard marker. And if you just had one single mind, that is it. But can you just see just one black marker here? Or if I move this, do you not see it move? If I change it to blue, do you not see the change? You see the change. Why is that? Because the mind itself isn't something that is one continuous mind. It's something, it's a process that works, that it rises for a perception to happen. And then what? Then gives way for another mind to perceive as well. So in other words, the mind will arise, will perceive, and then pass. That's why you can see and hear almost in sync. But we know our mind can only do one thing at one moment. Does anyone see a lag? Does anyone's mind lag? Like, do you see like this pen there, and next moment the pen pops up there? No, you see it almost flow. Why? Because the mind is always arising and passing away. Now, the mind arises and passes away. That's okay. That's all fun. That's all good. There's no issue there. However, there is an issue. It's not with the mind. It's with one building block of the mind, the mental base. For something to be made, you need to first have what? A strong? A foundation, a base. If I gave you something to make, right? Don't you first need a place to make it with? A place to make it on? I don't know, has humanity... Is humanity able to make floating buildings? Have we got this yet? No, because we need to find a way to anchor it down, to have a firm base. No matter what. Do you see chairs just floating? You make chairs in the sky. Does that happen? No, it needs a base. Everything needs a foundation. Just like that, the mind has a foundation. Or the mental base. This has the building blocks that has the right ingredients for the mind. Now, there's one issue with this. The mental base of the mind. So, as a visual representation, right? Because we can't draw our mind. The way we draw it is with a parabola curve. For the reason, because it arises and passes. It goes from one point to another. But really, does a mind do this? Is a mind jumping? No, this is the representation. Somehow that we can represent what a mind truly is. So we have this. Now, this bottom box here, this is how we represent the mental base. Now, in this mental base, there is one view or one understanding that creates a small issue. And that understanding is, in this world, there is something separate. Now, let me explain this, right? Because it is saying this, just saying this doesn't really make sense until you look at why we talk about this. To look at the real nature of the world, to strip nature down into its most basic form. What do we have? What is true nature? All right, let's take some examples. All right. When we think of nature, the first thing that comes to my head is what? It's a tree. Don't know why. Nature is equivalent to trees for me, right? What is a tree? Define what a tree is. All right. What do you need to construct a tree? What do you need to construct a tree? One thing you need is carbon. Good. But if we take a step above that, well, to make a tree, you need what? You need the trunk. You need the branches, you need the leaves, you need the roots, you need some soil. Without that, can you have a tree? Okay. To make a leaf, what do you need? To make a leaf, what do you need? Leaves are made out of what? Cells. To make a cell, what do you need? What do you need? Okay, so a cell has, what we learn is cells, you need proteins to make cells, right? Proteins. And how do you make proteins? You got carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and different things according to its structure. And hydrogen, don't forget hydrogen. How do we create the chemical formulas? See, I don't want to go straight into like, you know, quantum physics and go like, oh my God, these are quarks and leptons and positrons and whatnot. No. Simply put, that we have to understand is these, everything around us, yes, it's made from atoms, but what are atoms made from? Now, thanks to Einstein, right? We've all learned that, you know, what is Einstein's most famous equation? Perfect. E equals mc squared, which means what? Energy is equal to mass times the speed of light squared. Now, is it true or is it false? We don't know, right? We have no way of testing it. However, we know that there's a connection between energy and matter. So even carbon is made from what? Carbon is made from what? Energy. So technically, what is a tree? Leaves, branches, bark. But what are those? Cells. But what are those? Proteins. What are those? Atoms. What are those? Energy. So what is this actually? Okay. Next to the tree, now, my drawing is amazing, right? You can thank me later, right? I'm selling these drawings for millions, right? We have a house, right? We have a door, right? We have a house. What is a house made from? Bricks, cement, mortar. What are those made from? Again, chemical structures, atoms. What are those made from? Energy. The energy that makes this and the energy that makes this, what is the difference? What is the difference? Energy-wise, they are different, right? I mean, this is living. This is dead. So this energy has to have, you know, a living energy in it, and this has to have a dead energy in it. Yes? No? No, these are both just what? Energy. So, how is this different from this? Are they different? But energy waves, are they different? They are exactly the what? Same. However, don't we feel that one is more valuable than the other? Now, depending on person to person, different people will feel value for different things. For example, if you like the house, right? Very expensive house, then which one's more valuable? House. However, if you like the world and the environment, what's more valuable? But to give value, what do you first need? To give value, what do you first need? What is the value of this? Now, forget the border, forget the borders. I'm just talking about this white area here. What is the value of this white area? All right, we're bidding, right? We're starting off at $1. Do we have any bidders? Do I hear $2 at the back? $3? $4? How much is this worth? No, I'm not talking about the color white. I'm talking about nothing here. But out of nothing, if we create something, now what? You have this, and then you have something to compare it with. See, value is always to do with comparison. You have to compare. So over here, you can always say which one's more valuable once you compare. Say you've never seen a tree or a house before. Now I say which one's more valuable. Which one? What would you say? I think a house. Or I think a tree. But if I asked you why, you say, oh, no, I'm just guessing. I don't know. Because once you have something, you have it to compare it with something else. So once you have this black dot, you now have what? A white space. Now what? Which one's more valuable? Now, out of nothing, when there's something, that something has what? Value. Now, when that something has value, what do you need to do? What do you need to do? This is mine. That dot is mine, not yours. Don't you dare come close to it. It is my dot. Where did that idea come from? When there is something separate from the rest, something that you feel to have unique value, now what do you want? You want that for yourself. Because the mind is always looking for something that is separate, something that has unique value. You all know about like family heirlooms, right? You know, things that are passed down from generation to generation. I remember I once, with one of my friends, like they had golden earrings. And unfortunately, in the winter, she put on a coat and the earring got stuck somewhere and it fell off. And I think she was crying for approximately like 2 weeks. Now, okay, it was a golden earring, so it has some sort of value in her eyes. But then when I asked her, like, why are you so upset? It's an earring. I'm pretty sure we can find some better ones. No, you can't. Why can't you? Because it was passed down from my grandmother's grandmother. You know, this has generations of history in an earring. So the gold is what? The gold atom realizes that I am thousands of years old. I hold history inside of me. Does it? No, but the mind feels that it does. Because why? The mind is always looking for unique value. Something that is different from the rest. Something that is unique. Something that is separate from the rest. The mind is always looking for that. And a feeling that the mind is always looking for, which is different from the rest, is what? Is what? Happiness or pleasure. Pleasure is a feeling the mind is looking for, that it needs to be different from the rest. Now, it's not just happiness or pleasure that the mind is looking for. The mind is looking for anything that is unique. That's why if you leave a person in an empty room with just a button that can give an electric shock. There's an empty room and there's a machine that can give an electric shock to the person who presses the button. What do you think the person will do? There's an empty room and there's a button that gives like a painful electric shock. If you left a person long enough in there, what will the person do? Press the button to give themselves an electric shock. Why? Why? Because they enjoy pain. They want something unique from the rest. Something separate from the rest. Looking for a feeling that is separate from the rest. Now, this is exactly why we have a group of people that we call friends, and then a group of people that we call enemies. Why? Because you're looking for unique qualities, unique things, something that only your friends have, something that only your enemies have. Because once you have something here, right? Triangle. Once you have a triangle there, what is everything else? Once you have a triangle, what is everything else? You have triangle and not a triangle. You have a triangle and then everything else is what? Not a triangle. If you like a triangle, that means you want to bring this to yourself. But everything else? No, I don't want this. So coming back, the mind is always looking for something unique, something separate, something that it feels to be different from the rest. So coming back to this, is the tree and house different? In the eyes of energy, are they both different? Is heat energy and kinetic energy different? Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It can only be transferred. Which means they're both the same. Just two different forms. Or not even forms. Two different types. At that one moment, it just has a separate way of giving energy. Heat energy has a way of spreading its vibration along. And kinetic energy has a way of just moving. So in the end, what is the difference between both these? Nothing. However, when the mind is under this idea that there's something unique, something special, now it has, this is unique. This is special. This is my house. Now, once you have, once you have things that you like, beautiful things, now what? Now you want to keep it in this exact way. You want to keep it in a way that keeps you be feeling this immense amount of pleasure. So when someone comes up and tries to take this from you, what immediately happens?
Please don't take my house. If they are trying harder, right, to keep this feeling that this is separate.
I mean, if you really think about it, right, this pen, is this pen any more special than this pen? Is this pen any more special than this pen? Is there any, apart from color, is there any difference here? Well, technically, both of these are both energy. However, when one of these you feel to be different and one of these become yours, now what?
Mine? Don't you dare touch my pen.
That's why when someone takes your pen, you feel different. Even though you willingly give your pen, don't you feel that you've given your pen away? But does this pen really actually belong to you? What part of this pen's energy? Well, you can't really say pen's energy. What part of energy belongs to you? What part of energy really belongs to you? Does energy belong to anyone? But once you feel that, you know, this is unique, once this is separate, and you feel this to be mine, now when you give it to someone else, willingly or unwillingly, you feel different. You don't feel that you're giving away a pen. Instead, you feel that you're giving away what? My pen. You know how some people, they have the habits of biting the end of pens? Yeah? Pens, pencils. Like, I remember I had several friends. I think I used to have the habit, but I had amazing friends and parents that stopped me. But I remember that I had friends that would have, you know, the ends of pencils, right, deeply indented with the marks of their teeth. And when they haven't brought a pencil to school, and they ask you for a pencil, why do we feel reluctant to give it away? Don't bite it. Don't put it in your mouth. Why do we feel this? Because this is separate. This is different. This is unique. So coming back to the mind is always looking for this feeling of separate, feeling of unique. Why does the mind want it? Because it's a view placed in the mind base. It's a view that's deeply put in the base of the mind, the foundation of the mind, the building blocks of the mind. So the mind itself wants it. And therefore, it will find a way to feel that one is better than the other. One is separate from the rest. That this is different. This is special. Unfortunately, no matter how strong the mind is able to feel this, the mind rises, the mind passes away. What happens to that view? What happens to the view? The mind passes away by giving a message to the mind base saying, I had felt something separate. Go, try harder. Try next mind, try harder. You know how sometimes when there's children, right, and you know you have something the children wants. For example, you have a chocolate and the child wants a chocolate. You know how sometimes we play the game where you hold it in front of you, and every time they try to reach for it, you put it up. Is it just me who's done this? Right, where the child tries to grab it and you just put it up. And so they're so close, their hand just grazes the chocolate. But again, it's
too high above their reach. And so what do they do again? Next time, I got this. And so what do they do? They now have a run up and they jump. And again, they almost get it and it's again gone. The mind is almost the same. The mind feels as though it has found. It has found something that is unique, something that is special. However, the mind passes away. And it cannot fulfill the view it holds. So no matter how hard it tries, it will always end back where? Square one. It's almost as though, you know, you're sending out hundreds of people, right, to do something. Or say, for example, say you're at home and you're sick. You got a fever, right? And you're bedridden, right? You can't get out of bed. But let's say outside on a tree, right? You have a bird feeder, and every day, right, your favorite bird species gets in the bird feeder. Now, because you're bedridden, you can't go and see the birds. So what do? You send someone. Now, you send someone thinking, you know what, they're gonna see this bird and they're gonna come back to me and say, oh my God, you know, the bird, it was hopping around, drinking some water, ate some seeds, and then flew away. And it was blue with red stripes and green claws or whatnot. I don't know. So you send them off in hope that they come back with the message, that they saw it, with a description that they saw it. But every time they leave, they go and they do whatever they want. They may or may not see the bird, but they never come back. They never come back. They don't come back to relay the message. How many times do you think you will do it? How many times do you think that you will send out a person to relay, to tell you what the bird looks like? Either number one, you get better, but let's take that out. If we took that out of the equation, now what? Only one thing. You do this until you realize it's no point. You do this until you realize there is no point whatsoever. So this is why, no matter what we do, this is why you can have chocolate cake every single day, but you'll never get enough of it. You need it today, you need it tomorrow, you need it the day after. You'll get sick of it here and there, but will the craving for chocolate cake just disappear? Will the craving to go and do whatever you really want to do, will that craving ever just disappear? You know, there's a school of thought thinking that, you know, if I do everything that I really want to do, one day I'll become sick of it. If I do everything that I want to do, one day I'll become sick of it, and then I will no longer need it. So I'm going to eat chocolate until I'm sick of it. I'm going to watch TV until I'm sick of it. I'm going to watch all these episodes sometime until I'm sick of it. The thing is, the mind can be sick. However, the mental base, will the mental base be sick? No, because the message is never relayed back. The message is never relayed back to the base. And so the base is hopeless. This is why we have to help. This is why what we have to do is take this view and give and show the mind the reality. This is how we're taking steps back. By showing it and by understanding the difference between two things. A difference between two things. Why do I feel this to be unique? Why do I feel this to be different? If you can't take it to that level yet, that's okay. Think about it. Why am I angry? Why am I frustrated? Why am I stressed out? Because if you really ask this question and if you really look at why, you come to an illogical answer. Why? I'm angry. Why? Because he's not listening to me. Which infers what? He has to what? Listen to me. And he has to do everything that I say. That this is not a person, but instead a mindless robot that does everything that I want to do. Or even, you know, there is something that, you know, I really, really like these rose flowers. I really like these rose flowers. I'm scared if someone takes them away. Why am I scared? Is it because someone will take these away? Or is it because I'm worried that, well, I find I like this. I find that this is different from the rest. And I'm worried someone will take that difference away. Is that what we're worried about? Yeah, sure, you can ask a question. It's not that the mind base goes away. It's like the mind fades away. The mind itself fades away. However, it leaves behind the base. The base doesn't fade. The base is you can almost think of it to be the causes that give energy for the mind to arise. Right? So this is the building block. So it's almost as though it's almost like for as long as you have bricks, for as long as you have cement, the builder can make what? Any building you want. What is it? A square building, a circular building, an octagonal building. You name it, the builder will have it, will make it because it has the ingredients. Now, let's say you want a building. However, in your ingredients, you don't have cement. The builder will still try to build. However, will they be able to make a building? A proper building? No, because why? You make the building, and you know, we've made sandcastles, right? What happens to the sandcastle after you've made it? Right? Is it going to be there next time you come back to the same beach? No, it's going to go. But if you were to make it out of solid concrete, I don't know, you got sick of making sandcastles, therefore you get a concrete mixer, you mix them all together and you make a castle out of concrete, a concrete castle. Now, the next time you come to the beach, it will still be there. You come back after 100 years, most likely it will still be there. But because the mind, see, the mind is expecting to have a castle, but its only ingredients, what, is sand. So it's trying to make a castle out of sand and thinking that this is going to be something that's going to be with the mind forever. Because we don't, even though we know, the mind will always know that nothing will, you know, be with me forever. You know, the things I like will always leave me. The mind knows it, but it doesn't like to believe it. That's why when someone that you dearly love, you know, either gets sick, right, or something happens, they have a near miss with death.
why do we feel this sudden, overwhelming feeling of love? Because you realize that I could have lost them. Now, they're not gone yet. I could have lost them. So, coming back to it, we're not talking about the mind base fading away. The mind base, the ingredients are always there. What we're talking about is the mind. The mind will arise and fade away. But the mind is, you see, the mind is what perceives. That's what we have to remember. The mind is what perceives. Without the mind, we can't see. Assembly, but you know, the best, I think one of the best thought-provoking questions is, you know, in a forest, if a tree falls down and there's no one there to hear it, will it make a sound? We feel as though, yes, it should make a sound, whether there's someone to hear it or not. However, for there to be a sound, there needs to be what? Something to perceive it, a mind. Or else it's just what? A vibration. A vibration that spreads. That's all it is. If there was no eyes, would there be color? Even better, if you don't have eyes, will there be color? Just because I don't have eyes doesn't mean that this is not green, right? Well, in my world, you can call this green, but in my world, it's not green. In my world, I can't see. So, if I don't have eyes, is that green? See, these are really thought-provoking questions because you need a mind. The mind is what perceives the outside world. The mind is what creates the feeling of this, you know, this perception, perceiving what's there. Now, we can go in depth of why the mind does what it does. I mean, this is the thing. The beauty of the Buddha's Dharma is that it is so, I want to say rounded. Meaning no matter where you find, why does this happen the way it does? So you can explain why. Why does the mind receive, register, respond, and perceive? Why does it do it? You can understand why. Because it is so, it's such a perfect, it's talking about reality, right? So no matter where you look, reality will always be real. Whether you're on Earth or whether you're on Mars, right? The idea of this mind will not change. Because the mind will only do what a mind is supposed to do, which is what? Perceive. Just because we land on Jupiter, right? We find a way to live on Jupiter, doesn't mean our mind will change. That's the thing. No matter what, we will always end up where? On square one. We find a way to colonize Mars, right? By the end of 2050, we colonize Mars. But in reality, where, how far did we go in this game, the Snake and Ladders game? Square one. Because in the end, all that we are feeling is what? I know. Those of you who've ever traveled anywhere. All right, let's say, okay. We're going on a trip, right? We're going to go on a trip. Say, we're going to go on the trip and we're going to climb Mount Everest. Right? All of us. Does Mount Everest have a strange purple that we've never seen before? Does Mount Everest have a strange vibration that we've never heard before?
I mean, you know, is the purple like slightly like more vibrant on Mount Everest? What is the difference? Well, you'll see color. You will hear what? You will perceive light rays. You will perceive vibrations. You will perceive whatever you put on your tongue. You'll perceive that. Apart from that, what else would you perceive? Does your body know it is climbing up Mount Everest? Does your body know that? Oh, wait, it will perceive what? It will perceive it's cold. It will perceive the lack of oxygen. It will perceive that if we keep going, like I'm in physical like pain right now. I can't walk another step. It will feel that. But does it know it's climbing up Mount Everest? Does your body know? Can't you simulate the same feeling right while not climbing up Mount Everest? And you see, you don't even need technology for this. All you need to do is go to sleep and imagine climbing up Mount Everest. And you feel what? I'm climbing up Mount Everest. But in the end, did you? In the end, did you receive anything apart from sight, sound, smells, taste, and touch? No. All you receive in the end is what? Just sights, sounds, smells, taste, touch. So wherever you are, what do you receive? What does your mind perceive? Sights, sounds, smells, taste, and tactile sensations. Anything else? But the mind uses that to feel what? I'm climbing up Mount Everest. You know, I'm doing something. You know, I'm the youngest person to climb up Mount Everest. I'm the oldest person to climb up Mount Everest. I'm going to climb up Mount Everest in the shortest amount of time, right? I'm going to run up Mount Everest. You can think whatever you want to think. But in reality, what's happening? Your mind is just what? Perceiving. So in the end, you come back home after doing what? Perceiving. You spend 2 months training and practicing and finally climbing up Mount Everest. Eventually, all you've done is what? All the mind has done is what? Perceived. See, the mind is just, you know, perceiving. No matter what you do, the mind is what? Perceives. You are going to be given the most luxury in the world. You know, you'll be sitting on a throne for the rest of your life. What would the mind do? Perceive. So, perceiving that it's on a throne, perceiving it's on one of these chairs. Difference? It's just what? A perception. Still back to where? Square? Square one. See, no matter what we do, we have to realize we're going back to square one unless we realize the reality, unless we look and we observe reality and we see, why am I feeling what I'm feeling? Why am I actually feeling stressed right now? Why? Why am I feeling overjoyed right now? Why am I feeling, you know, surprised? Why? Because once you realize that, you know, both of these are energies, that everything around you is just energy in different forms. Now, that's not saying there is no pen here, right? If you don't see a pen here, you should go to Specsavers, right? Because, you know, there is something here. However, what is its actual value? What is its actual value? Is how different is this from this? These are these questions. These are questions that, you know, we don't really ask ourselves until you meet a teacher. You see, we don't know how to climb up this game, to play the game properly, until you meet a teacher. Until you meet someone who has realized and found out what the game truly is. And not only found out, but also hacked the game. Rigged the rigged game. Because once you have a teacher, the teacher is there to guide you. To take you through every step you need to take to finally get to 100. Something that I really want to plant in your minds is, why not just sacrifice a couple, sacrifice some of your time just to go up? I mean, after say sacrifice just a couple of maybe months, maybe a year. Sacrifice a single year so you can climb up the grid to get to square 100. See, after you reach square 100, now what? Now you can enjoy the rest of life. Now you don't need to roll a dice. Your life is not dependent on the roll of a dice. Whether you roll or whether you don't roll, it doesn't matter. Once you get to 100, do you need to roll anymore? No. You can roll if you want to, but you don't have to. Now there's no need to, wait, please, okay, five, and roll. You don't need that, because why? You're already there. Sacrifice this life to understand the reality of the world. Because this is the only thing. Understanding is the only thing that will help us go further up and to one day reach 100, square 100. Only the reality will get us there. Everything else will bring us back to square 0. Sacrifice just a small amount of time. In your vast lifespan to understanding. Because I promise you, I guarantee, like if you want, I can sign whatever document you want me to sign, right? I can guarantee by understanding reality, your life will become so much more better. You will do everything that you are doing apart from one thing and one thing only. You can do whatever you want to do. You can go to, you see, once you go to square 100, you can go to New York and have that pizza. It's not stopping, there's nothing stopping you. However, there's one thing that you're not going to be able to do ever again. And it's that. What's that? You'll never be able to suffer again. Well, I don't know, unless you want to suffer. If you want to suffer, please keep going, right? Still keep growling and coming back to square one. That's all your choice. But if you go to square 100, I can guarantee you will no longer feel sad, feel upset, feel stressed out, feel overwhelmed, feel as though the entire world is collapsing. You will not feel it. I was talking with my teacher, and one example that really stuck in my mind is that he's telling me that, you can hog tie me and I can find a way to somersault. But I am incapable of being angry. So if we come back to, so the question is, why are we incapable? Why, by understanding reality, are you incapable of being angry? I think that the best analogy that I can give, and also I'll come to a theory as well, but first I want to give the analogy. The best analogy I can give is, Has everyone seen the rabbit on the moon? You know, on the moon, like there's an image of a rabbit. This is imaginary. But if we went to a child and said, "Oh, look, there's a rabbit on the moon," what will happen to the child? Wow, it's a rabbit. Oh, what does it look like? And then you explain, it's a white rabbit with a fluffy tail and whatnot. What does the child next want? Can I see it? Can I have it? Please. Now, if someone was to say something against the rabbit, if the child truly believes, we don't even need to take rabbit, take Santa Claus. Oh, we won't go there. Just in case people still believe in Santa Claus. But say anything a child believes, you know, make belief. They believe as though it's real. And therefore, if you say something against it, what do they feel? Angry, frustrated. And, you know, I remember my little sister. I remember the day I went up to her and explained to her that Santa was not real. And you have no idea how much tears she cried that day. Yes, it was wrong of me. She was only like 5 or something. Right? It was wrong of me to do it. But, you know. So if you say something against Santa, what happens? They're now angry, frustrated, all this. But when they realize Santa's not real, someone draws a picture of Santa and draws 2 horns, will they be offended? Will they be, you know, really angry with the person who drew it? It's because of this, right? The mind, when the mind understands that, you know, the entire world is. So we talked about a bit of this last time as well. You know, one world, one family. Remember? So we talked about how, you know, everything is just part of one world here, one almost sea of energy. If a mind is able to understand that this is energy, and that energy is no different to this, now no matter what you do to this pen, can you be hurt? Okay, I snapped it. If I realize that's energy, well, that's energy being transformed into a different form. But if I say, no, this is a pen, this is a very important pen, or this is just... Honestly, you don't even need importance. This is a pen. If you have that view, this is a pen. Now, this pen can make you sad. It can make you angry. It can make you frustrated. Why? This is a pen. You know, this is the best example I can give. This is a pen as well. A red pen. Can you stand? This is... Why do we feel this to be really off? I mean, a lid is for this reason, right? A lid is to cover. But when this is like this, why do we feel it to be off? Because this lid belongs to that pen. That lid belongs to this pen. Does the pen know that? Does the pen actually care? You know how some people are really frustrated when you leave a pen without the lid on? Oh, I had a friend like this, right? You leave a pen without the lid on, they get so frustrated. A lid is supposed to be on the pen. So we joke and we say, well, you can't write with the lid on, right? But they feel that this lid belongs to the pen. Does the pen care? Does the pen care? The pen doesn't care, but the mind does. Because the mind thinks this pen to be one fixed, separate thing. But this is part of nature the same way that everything else is. I have a pen and then I have a broken pen. Both of these are what? Part of nature. But yet you feel that this is part of nature. The broken pen isn't. The broken pen, someone's broken the pen, but this pen is part of nature. Someone takes a chainsaw and cuts this tree down. They are destroying what? They are destroying what? Nature. Oh, curse those who destroy nature. But the cutting of a tree is also what? Also what? Nature. Because why? It is all just energy doing, it is flowing in a certain way. It is energy just taking a path. However, you feel that, no, someone cut this down. Always trying to give it to someone or something. Someone has cut it down. No, it's part of nature taking its flow. Now, that's not saying cutting trees is right or wrong. We're not going there, right? Right, trees, nature, environment we need to live, right? So it's not saying that cutting down trees is good or bad. What I'm saying is, why do we feel this to be, you know, not part of nature? A cut tree. It is part of nature, but yeah, you feel it to be different. So because if you were to feel that this tree is a fixed separate thing, now if someone's to cut the tree down, what will happen? What do you feel? Upset, angry, frustrated. Because you feel this to be what? Separate. You feel that this separate thing is now destroyed. Has it been destroyed? Is it destroyed? Or is it taking another form? Is energy in a different arrangement? If you realize that all of these are just arrangement of energies, how can you be mad? If it's wrong, you can go up and tell the person, excuse me, sir, madam, you know, cutting down trees is wrong. Stop doing it. But you're not upset. You're not angry. You're not frustrated. You're not stressed out because a tree's been cut. Instead, if you know it's bad, you go and say. Or maybe you may not go and say. But you're not upset about it. So, all we have to do is we have to just understand the reality of things. Understand that it's just an arrangement. Arrangement of energy. By understanding that very simply, like I said, just take, just sacrifice small amount of time in your lifespan just to understand. Literally just sacrifice, it's just a small amount of time. You go to 100 and then you can do whatever you want. If you go to 100 and you go to the moon, that's fine. Go to square 100 and become the richest man alive. Do that. But do that after you reach 100. Not 100 years old, right? Not 100 years old. Do it after you reach square 100. Because now you can enjoy. You can enjoy the rest of your life. You can truly enjoy the rest of your life. With no amount of suffering, no amount of sadness, no amount of stress to pull you down. This is why the Buddha comes into this world. The Buddha comes into this world to show the mind the way out. The way out of this game, to finally get to square 100. That's all he does. Go to 100 and then after that, well, do whatever you want. After you go to square 100, do whatever you want. Most people, after they go to square 100, those who's on the journey and those who've reached 100 always wants to share with another person because, you know, it's very valuable advice. But after that, the Buddha has not said, like, after you become an arahant, this is what you have to do. Has he said that in scripture? No. Because after you become 100, after you go to square 100, do whatever you want to do. That's because you still feel that these are all separate. That, you know, this is separate from this. That is separate from this. If I was in that situation and you are creating a world in your mind, and experiencing that. the reason why you would feel sad is because you felt that, you know, this is what is happening to the triangle. If you took a moment to realize this triangle is still part of this. So if I was to even remove this triangle, now what? Now, are you upset about that? Now, this is not saying, okay, when other people are suffering, rejoice and clap and say, yay, everyone is. No, this is not, we're not trying to make senseless human beings. No, we're trying to make our mind, or to condition our mind to realize that this is what it is. However, when a mind is defiled, it feels this. Therefore, I must help what? The defiled mind. That's why once you understand this, now you can help others better than you can help before. Because normally when you help other people, there's always this idea, what will happen to me? That's always stopping you. What will happen to me? For example, let's say you see someone who's hungry and you have a meal. Sometimes you won't be able to give that meal away, because why? What do you think? If I give this away, what will happen to me? Why am I going to be hungry? But by understanding that hunger is an issue, not your hunger or their hunger, hunger is an issue. Now you can give an answer to hunger. Maybe this other person won't be able to eat for the next couple hours, but you'll be at home. Who knows? And be able to enjoy another meal. So you still give away. That's because you understand what? Yes, it's all part of nature. However, that mind feels what? That mind feels what? Feels pain. How can I help that mind to no longer feel pain? So this is not trying to make you feel senseless, you know, oh, everything in the world is, you know, happening, you know, everyone is dying, oh great, okay, I'm okay with everything. No, this is for you to, first of all, not be affected by it, but second of all, help other people. The best word is selflessly. You know, selfish and selfless. Selfless has the most profound meaning ever. So you'll be able to help other people selflessly. So that's because, again, the reason why we feel sad is because you still feel the separateness. Because still, no matter how much we understand this, understanding is one thing, but we have to put this and internalize it. Just because we understand doesn't mean it is already in deep set into the mind base. No, understanding is one. What we have to do is we have to keep running our mind through the reality, cleaning the what? Cleaning the mental base. Once the mental base is clean, now once the square is zero, now what? Nothing else to do. But all we have to do is just keep it running. Keep running your mind in the environment of reality, right? With the association of noble people, by associating the reality, meaning the Dhamma. By associating people and the Dhamma, the teachers and all this, is how you continue to run this mind in reality. And at the end, comes out a pure mind. A pure mind. Okay, so that's a question for next time, right? Okay, so next, as announcements, next Monday we have Dakineyo, right? Monday. Yes. Monday we have Dakineyo. So those of you who are free on Mondays, most of you have no choice, right? You're bound to come. But those of you who have a choice, please do come. It is one of the most meritorious, the most, I would say, the most rarest of sights that you will ever be able to witness in a lifetime. To be able to see hundreds of sons and daughters of the Buddha walking in a single file line and giving them alms is only a sighting seen back in the time of the Buddha. Honestly. Apart from that, where else are you able to see hundreds of sons and daughters of the Buddha walk in a single file line and give alms to those? So again, if you are able to, if you're free on the Monday, please do come, right? And rejoice in the immense amount of merit. Do we have any other messages? Do we have any other messages? We have discussions after this, after alms. We have discussions after the alms. So any problems that... any problems with the Dhamma and all this, you have, we are always into what? Providing the environment for what? The mind to understand reality. So there'll be discussions where you're able to ask your questions and you're able to clarify parts that you don't understand, and also have the association of the Mahasangha. Because again, I think maybe because this is still one of the, like, it's a very rare opportunity. Being surrounded by the Mahasangha is such a rare opportunity. An opportunity that will happen once in millennials, basically. In your entire life, it will happen just a few times, literally like a lightning strike. It's there and it's gone. So being able to associate the Mahasangha and listen and understand the Dhamma is one of the most rarest things. So I do highly recommend you coming and having discussions with some of our monks. Apart from that, I think that's all. So today we talked about snakes and ladders, and we played a game, right? Next week we may even play the game. No, I'm joking. We're not going to play games. Right? We're very serious here. We don't play games. But we talked about snakes and ladders, right? We talked about the game of life. Right? That no matter what we do, because I really want this idea to be deep-rooted, to be planted in your minds. Why? The next time you do something, to ask yourselves, am I going back to square one? I apologize in advance in case I ruined anyone's happiness. So you're going to go and do something that you think is going to give you immense amount of pleasure. Then you ask yourself, am I going back to square one? Ruining your happiness, if that is so. I apologize in advance. But these are questions that you should be asking yourselves to understand reality, to keep going steps forward, to come to square 100. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receiving Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through the generation of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to
all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all of the chief prelates of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as the monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits that we will acquire to our devotees. Friends of the monastery who forsake our merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, arms, rose, medicines, as well as those who pass in their know-how, extend their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who've helped us, support us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of the merits, may they be healed of physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from non-meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As all take a moment to transfer merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakudeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddhisasana. Let's not forget among them will be our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take one chance of merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends and family to us in the infinite long journey in samsara. Let's all take a moment chance of merits to all those who have helped to support us, assist us in any way they could. Also take a moment chance of merits to the members of the armed forces, or as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost their lives in the war be their friend or foe rejoice in the merits required today. Let's all take a moment chance of merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let's take a moment chance of merits to them. May the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble woeful path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits we've acquired throughout the day, we will witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahatnvanses, Arahatmihinvanses, in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become Arahatnvanse or Arahatmihinvanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Nobuchipo Jem be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnha Dvesha ginnen midetnha Moha ginnen midetnha Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin
සුකීත තරවෙත්වා නිබ්භාන පරම සුකයින් සුකීත තරවෙත්වා රාග ගිනි නිවේවා ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා මෝහ ගිනි නිවේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුනුරන්ගේ සුසියනන්ත මහගුණ බැලින් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්ත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පමසකින් සුඛතර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු